out there, oh, a peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, the church, or interfaith relations. Today I've invited Suzanne Mann for a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Suzanne, a very warm welcome and hi to my 12 program.
Kia ora, Beata, and thank you so much for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Suzanne. Suzanne is the Secretary of the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of New Zealand, and she's been involved in interfaith for many years. So that's why I was thinking I'll ask her about the Baha'i faith to tell us a little bit more about the Baha'i faith. Suzanne, you are a member of the Baha'i faith, which originated in the Middle East, so as many of our world religions. Can you tell us more about the founder of the Baha'i faith?
Of course, thank you. Yes, well, throughout history, the great religions have provided the primary driving force behind the civilization of human character. You know, people have developed self-discipline, devotion, heroism from following these great religions. And many of the religions' moral principles have been translated into structures and patterns of conduct, which have really served to elevate human relationships and advance humanity's collective life. And every time a manifestation of God appears, a fuller measure of inspiration for the next stage in the awakening and progress of humanity is released into the world. So a human being, ordinary in every other outward respect, but they're called to be the mouthpiece for God. And one may call to mind, for instance, Moses standing before the burning bush, the Buddha receiving enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, the Holy Spirit descending upon Jesus in the form of a dove, or the Archangel Gabriel appearing to Muhammad. So in the middle of the 19th century, God summoned Baha'u'llah. And Baha'u'llah means the glory of God. And he was summoned to deliver a new revelation to humanity. And for four decades, thousands of verses and letters and books flowed from his pen. He was a prisoner for most of that time, but his writings are prolific. In his writings, he outlined a framework for the development of a global civilization, which takes into account both the spiritual and the material dimensions of human life. He wrote that he had never aspired to worldly leadership. His sole purpose had been to just deliver what God had bidden him to do. And he suffered 40 years of imprisonment, torture, exile, just for bringing God's latest message to humanity. Today, his life and his mission are becoming increasingly well known across the planet. There are millions of people learning to apply his teachings to their individual and collective lives for the betterment of the world. And many of these people aren't joining the Baha'i community, but they are working alongside Baha'is, drawing on the teachings that Baha'u'llah gave. Baha'u'llah's teachings are for the whole world, and we don't, as Baha'is, hold on to them and say, you know, this is for us only. They're for everybody.
Suzanne, when you say joining the Baha'i community, what do you mean with that? Do you register or do you get baptized, or what is the joining event?
It is a type of just registration, really, for administrative purposes, because, you know, Baha'is have elections, so the registered members of the Baha'i community would vote for their local institutions, their national institutions, and so it is just if somebody recognizes that Baha'u'llah is the manifestation of God and they desire to follow his teachings and to be part of the community. They just indicate that they'd like to join, and their registration is followed up, and it's a very simple process, really.
Mm. So you said it's 200 years ago that he was born, is that right?
Correct. Yeah. 1817, and he passed away in 1892.
Well, he had a long life despite all the captures, spending so much time in prison.
Yes, yes, he did. He did. He suffered immensely, and the scars of his imprisonment and the chains that he'd had round his neck were forever with him. But yes, despite all that, his revelation, his ministry lasted a very long time.
Some of the celebrations, the holy days and feast days of the Baha'i faith are also in our Religious Diversity Center calendar. And I just wanted to ask you, one of the holy days or what special celebrations is the martyrdom of the Bab. What is the martyrdom of the Bab?
Well, in the middle of the 19th century, it was really one of the most turbulent periods in world history. A young merchant announced that he was the bearer of a message destined to transform the life of humanity. And at that time, when his country, Iran, was known as Persia in those days, was undergoing widespread moral breakdown and many problems, his message really aroused a lot of hope and excitement among all the classes of the society there, and he attracted thousands, literally tens of thousands of followers. He took the name the Bab, which just means the gate, because he indicated that he was the gate to a new revelation. And his call for spiritual and moral reformation and his attention to improving the position of women and the lot of the poor and so on, his prescription for the spiritual renewal was very revolutionary. And at that time, he founded a distinct independent religion of his own and inspired his followers to transform their lives and carry out great acts of heroism. He announced that humanity stood at the threshold of a new era, and that his mission, which was to last only 6 years, was to prepare the way for the coming of a manifestation of God who would usher in an age of peace and justice that had been promised in all of the world's religions. And that was Baha'u'llah. So he was the gateway, paving the way, preparing the people for the coming of Baha'u'llah.
So we can know each other personally.
They never met.
Okay.
But they were in connection. There was some connection between. They wrote to one another. Because the Bab was imprisoned very soon after he announced, and so there was no real way to meet. But we commemorate his martyrdom, and it's one of our nine holy days in the Baha'i calendar, because of his station, who he was. But the circumstances of his martyrdom are really quite extraordinary. And if there's time, hopefully I can explain a little bit of that, because it has been recorded by very well-known historians of the day, and they verified what happened. In 1850, the Grand Vizier of the Shah of Persia at that time, who was Nasruddin Shah, the Grand Vizier ordered the execution of the Bab. He had been imprisoned at that time, and when the guards came to take him on the day of his execution, on the 9th of July, the Bab told them that no earthly power could silence him until he'd finished all that he had to say, because he was in the middle of a conversation recording some things with his secretary was taking down some last instructions, and that was when the guards had come, and he wanted to finish what he was saying to his amanuensis or secretary, but the guards just pulled him out. And there were thousands and thousands of people crowding the rooftops around the overlooking the barracks in the square in Tabriz, which is in the north of Persia, and he was to be executed by a firing squad. And it was the intense heat of the noonday sun, and everyone was, you know, he had attracted so much admiration and attention that it was quite a thing that was happening at that time. In fact, even a newspaper in New Zealand, I think it was the Herald at that time, had a little article mentioning his execution. So vibrations of that kind of did reverberate around the world. But what happened was a regiment of 750 soldiers opened fire in three successive volleys, each one 250. And of course, in those days, there was a lot of smoke from the gunpowder. So when that finally cleared, all the dust and smoke had cleared, the Bab had vanished from sight. And he had been tied with one of his young followers who had begged to be, go with him. But his companion was standing there unharmed, and the Bab had disappeared. The ropes had been severed by the bullets, and after a search, they found the Bab back in the cell, finishing his conversation with his secretary that had been interrupted earlier. And then he said to them, "Now you may proceed to fulfill your intention." But the first regiment, the leader of the first regiment, was a Christian by the name of Sam Khan, and he refused. He said, "No, I'm not going to carry out this." And so he marched his regiment off, and they had to bring in another regiment. Again, 750, and this time the bodies of the Bab and his young follower were utterly shattered, apart from the Bab's face, which was untouched. And then a whirlwind of dust engulfed the city, blotting out. It was just this terrible dust storm that arose and lasted until nightfall. And the Bab's remains were hidden away for more than half a century, until 1909, when they were finally interred on Mount Carmel in the Holy Land. And today they're entombed in this exquisite gold-domed shrine, encompassed by spectacular gardens and fountains, and the Bab rests in glory as a symbol of the triumph of the cause that he heralded, despite the fiercest of opposition. Throughout the world, but millions and millions of Baha'is recognize the Bab as the divinely inspired herald of the Baha'i faith, and they turn to his writings and respect him and commemorate his martyrdom.
And Suzanne, you just mentioned the Holy Land. What is the significance of the Holy Land for the Baha'i, for the Baha'is?
I think that the Holy Land is significant for Jews, for Muslims, for Christians, and for Baha'is. It's called the Holy Land for a reason, I think. It has so much history and religious history associated with it. And when Baha'u'llah and the Bab arose in Persia, but the clergy and the government and the authorities were really felt very threatened by the transformation and change that the teachings would have heralded. And it was, because there's no clergy in the Baha'i faith, I think the clergy there really kind of agitated to have them removed. So in the Bab's case, they executed him. In Baha'u'llah's case, he was from a noble family. His father had served in the court of the Shah, and Baha'u'llah himself had been offered a ministry in the court, and he turned it down. He said he was not interested in earthly glory or leadership, and so they didn't feel they could execute him, so they banished him from Iran. First of all, he went into what's now Iraq, and that was the part of the Ottoman Empire. So the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire and the Shah of Persia were in close communication, and And the Ottoman Empire sort of decided that they'd be happy to have him there. But then he became too problematic for them as well, because people were attracted in great numbers. So they banished him even further. The furthest outreach of the Ottoman Empire that they could think of was Palestine at that time. And Acre,
maybe we just have to mention for people who might not know, the Ottoman Empire, the base was in today's Turkey.
Yes. Yes, Constantinople, which is now Istanbul, was where the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire had his base. But Palestine at that time was part of the Ottoman Empire as well. And so the furthest away they could send Baha'u'llah was what they intended. And that was a prison city of Acre. It had actually been a crusader city centuries and centuries before that. And it was a dreadful place, a walled city, decrepit, foul, it was a really horrendous place, and that's where they sent him to be imprisoned. And so that is now in modern day Israel, but that's where Baha'u'llah passed away, that's where the Bab's remains were transferred to, that's where the administrative center of the Baha'i faith is located. So it's a place of pilgrimage for the Baha'is around the world, and we have conventions every 5 years there, where delegates from all over the world go to elect the Universal House of Justice, who has its seat there. So it's holy to Baha'is, and it's also the spiritual and administrative center of the Baha'i world faith.
And Suzanne, you just mentioned that people come from all over the world. It's not just the followers that come from former Persia and who would have known him or who would have known somebody who knew him. But so do you do missionary work? How do you spread around the world?
Oh, thank you for asking. The Baha'is feel a great sense of responsibility to ensure that all of humanity knows that the promised one of all ages has come, and come with a revelation that's for all peoples to draw inspiration from and guidance from, whether or not they wish to become members of the Baha'i community. So from the early beginnings of the faith, Baha'is have arisen and gone to countries and territories around the globe. And we call these friends pioneers rather than missionaries. But there are many, many passages in the Baha'i writings that teach us how to walk in the ways of unity and to help others take the same path. And although the oneness of humankind is an undeniable truth, the peoples of the earth are really still so far removed from creating true unity. It's no easy task. Baha'u'llah has brought a blueprint for it, but we have to work for it. It's not something that's just handed to us. Mm-hmm. But those who choose to become Baha'is, they collaborate alongside those who are just drawn to the teachings of Baha'u'llah and want to work for a better world.
And Suzanne, one of the principles I understand of the Baha'i faith is the equality of men and women. And yet your faith is present in so many countries, as you mentioned, but that some of these countries have been traditionally very patriarchal. How are you changing these attitudes?
Yes. The Baha'i writings state that until women are provided equal status to men, humanity cannot advance or progress. And the Baha'i teachings compare men and women to the two wings of a bird, or the two hands of a human body. And until both are strong, so both wings of a bird or both hands of a body, the body of the bird or the human being cannot function well. So it's important for human advancement that both men and women have equal opportunities and are both playing their full role in society. And so as people grow in their understanding of this principle, it becomes clear to them that human success and prosperity is really dependent on the achievement of equality. And there are many examples of communities in those countries you mentioned where change has occurred. You know, there's for example, in India, I know of some places there where, you know, traditionally the women have not felt able to engage very fully in the life of the community, but that's changed through their involvement. I mean, Baha'is are quite active in a social action, which is to kind of promote social and economic progress for a given population, whatever their beliefs or backgrounds. The purpose of social action for Baha'is is not to spread the Baha'i faith or to win converts, but really to transform society for the better. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are really three protagonists in the transformation of society. It's the individual, the community, and the institutions. And we've seen where there's a lot of breakdown between institutions and communities and so on in the world. And we have a different view of the interdependence of those three.
And you're certainly challenging the status quo with the attitude, but you will be proven right that men and women, if you treat them equally, I like this picture of the two wings.
Yeah.
And often men and women are put in different parts of the, focus on a certain part of the brain, but if you have them two together, that's definitely the best. Susan, in Auckland, we have a lot of places of worship. We have churches and temples and synagogues and mosques and so on. Are there any spiritual places for the Baha'i? Where do they meet or where do they worship?
Baha'i houses of worship or temples will one day be established in every place. We don't currently have them in New Zealand. They're nine-sided buildings with nine doors symbolising the unity of all religions. And everyone, regardless of religion, is welcome to pray and meditate in these temples. In Auckland, we have a site for a future national temple. But in our view, communal worship doesn't depend on a particular building, and Baha'is hold many devotional gatherings around the city, around the country, in homes or Baha'i centres, or sometimes in a park, you know, wherever. Everyone is welcome, and we view worship and service to humanity as going hand in hand.
Okay, that's good. And tell me, do you have a special language? Do you have the language of Bahá'u'lláh? It seems like at least you had some expressions that seem to be Persian. Do you have a language that every Baha'i speaks or understands a bit?
Well, Bahá'u'lláh and the Báb wrote in both Arabic and Persian. So all of the original writings, which are now, those original writings are now in the archives and the research department at the World Centre. But many of them, not all, because there was such a lot of it, but many are translated into English, into all the languages of the world. And in New Zealand, we mostly pray and read scripture in English, but there are also Baha'is who are Maori, Baha'is who are Samoan, Tongan. In fact, we've got dozens of ethnicities in the Baha'i community in New Zealand. So, you know, because the watchword of the Baha'i faith is unity in diversity, we often at our gatherings might have prayers in a number of different languages, or songs in English or Maori, you know, Waiata, things like that. So cultural diversity is really welcomed in our gatherings, but English is the predominant one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. It has been really interesting what we've learned about the Baha'i faith. And for those who see the video, I see behind you a picture of a beautiful garden. Where is that?
That is in the Holy Land, just outside of Acre, where Baha'u'llah was imprisoned for so many years. In his final few years, he was allowed, he was still technically a prisoner, but he was allowed to reside outside of the prison city of Acre, and this is just there. It's the house where he was able to, his family rented it for him and he was able to be there.
And one more question, because I see that the garden is beautiful, and but it looks very symmetric. Is there a rule of symmetry within the Baha'i architecture? You mentioned the number 9, but I'm just also wondering if there is any other rule.
The guardian of the Baha'i faith was the great-grandson of Baha'u'llah, and he was the chief designer of these gardens. And so we've maintained for his, you know, he had a real eye for symmetry and beauty, and I think that his standard or his approach has been sort of followed over the years. So that's probably why it's like that.
Thank you so much, Susan. Thank you for all your explanations, and thank you for your time to come for this interview.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure, Beata. Thank you so much.
And for those who are listening to the Muffin Talk, I'd like to just give a few notices regarding our next programs for Titipona, Mustadi and Joy. So tonight, 7 o'clock to 8:30, we'll have the second part of Women in the Scriptures and Mythology. Dr. Christopher Longhurst will show us examples of Michelangelo's fascinating paintings of 3 women from the Old Testament and 3 women from the Greek mythology. And then there will be further sessions that are coming up with Brother Kieran Finn on Friday, the 20th of May, about Mary, the Mother of God. And in June, the 13th, 20th, and 27th of June, we will have a series about St. Paul. So thank you very much, Suzanne, and I wish you all a good Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Out there, old pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet. For the world a new day dawning and shines a light to greet. We're singing, this is the day when the hope was calling. This is the day when the light did shine. This is the day when the world can sing. Can you hear the cry? For the world a new day dawning and shine.